Welcome to Risky Business News, a podcast on the recent news from the cybersecurity industry. This is Cătălin Câmpanu. Today is October 3rd, and this podcast episode is brought to you by application allow listing software maker Airlock Digital. In today's top story, Interpol and South African officials said they detained last week two Nigerian nationals living in the city of Pretoria for their roles in a sprawling cybercrime campaign that stole more than $1.8 million from victims via online romance scams and business email compromise attacks. The two suspects, aged 39 and 42, are believed to be members of the Airlords Nigerian-based criminal syndicate. The arrest last week marked the first time that Airlords members were arrested on cybercrime-related charges. Also known as the National Association of Airlords or the Supreme High Confraternity, this group was founded in 1963 as a student organization that slowly evolved into a secret cult and eventually into a fully-fledged crime syndicate, mostly known for its involvement in sex trafficking and sex slavery across Africa and Europe. The Airlords now join the ranks of the Italian Neapolitan Mafia and Nigeria's infamous Black Axe group, as classic criminal syndicates that are now dabbling in cybercrime-related activities. Now moving on to news and hacks and breaches. A hacker exploited a bug in the code of DeFi platform TransitSwap on Saturday and stole more than $23 million worth of cryptocurrency. After the company confirmed the hack on Sunday and said they have obtained the hacker's IP address and email address, blockchain security firm Slowmist reported that the attacker appears to have returned 70% of the stolen funds already. Also in hacking news, people in Ghana have been unable to purchase new power credits for almost a week, and some have had their electricity cut off to their homes after a threat actor hacked the electricity company of Ghana and locked its servers. While the company has not confirmed the incident, local security experts believe the company is dealing with a devastating ransomware attack. In tech security related news, Microsoft said last week that its engineers rewrote the entire Windows Defender smart screens technology to improve reliability and performance, along with cross-platform portability. Smart screen is Microsoft's analog for Google's Safe Browsing API and is a technology the company uses to detect phishing and malicious sites. In government and policy-related news, U.S. Representative Doreen Bogdan-Martin was elected as the new head of the UN's International Telecommunication Union, also known as the ITU, the UN agency that sets global standards for telecoms and tech infrastructure. Bogdan-Martin won 139 of the 175 possible votes, defeating Russia's representative, and will replace China's Hu Linzhao, who has led the ITU for two consecutive terms since 2014. Also in government-related news, two new cases of Pegasus infections have popped up this weekend in Indonesia and Mexico. In the first, Reuters reported on Friday that more than a dozen senior Indonesian government and military officials had their iPhone devices targeted with spyware made by Israel's NSO group. Chief Economic Minister Erlangga Hartarto, senior military personnel, two regional diplomats, and advisors in Indonesia's Defense and Foreign Affairs Ministries were notified by Apple in November 2021 about the attacks, which allegedly involved the use of the forced entry iOS exploit. In a second case on Sunday, Citizen Lab and Red also published reports on three new infections with the Pegasus spyware against two Mexican journalists and a human rights defender. The spying incidents allegedly took place between 2019 and 2021, are believed to have been carried out under the guidance of government officials, possibly the Mexican army, and also took place after Mexico's president assured the public that the government would stop using spyware after similar incidents were also disclosed in 2017. In US government-related news, CISA said in an advisory published last Thursday that the agency plans to migrate to the new TLP 2.0 protocol in November this year. The new TLP 2.0 protocol was released in early August and makes minor improvements to the 1.0 version, including the addition of a new classification and sharing level named TLP Amber Strict. Meanwhile in Russia, the country's Ministry of Internal Affairs announced on Friday the creation of UBK, a new unit inside the ministry specifically dedicated to fighting cybercrime. Also in Russia, the Roskomnadzor, the country's telecommunications watchdog, also blocked access to music streaming platform SoundCloud on Friday, most likely related to the platform hosting podcast discussing Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In cybercrime-related news, besides the Interpol action against the Airlords in South Africa, German police also detained the 24-year-old man last week on suspicion of stealing 4 million euros from private bank accounts. Authorities said the suspect gained access to victims' accounts after phishing the account owners, including getting access to transaction codes needed to complete the funds transfers. In malware-related news, Walmart's security team also said last week that they saw new attacks using the Diavol ransomware. The finding is of note because the ransomware was developed and used exclusively by the Trickbot cybercrime syndicate. The new attacks also come after US authorities have detained Alavite, the Trickbot member who initially created Diavol. In vulnerability research published over the past few days, two write-ups stand out above the rest. The first is from vulnerability researcher and pen tester Mr. Docs, who published technical research last week showing how the application mode in Chromium-based browsers like Google Chrome and Microsoft Edge can be used to create realistic-looking desktop phishing applications. The second write-up comes from Italian security researchers Jacopo Tediosi and Francesco Mariani, who discovered a technique that could have allowed them to poison the cache of all websites running on top of the Akamai CDN. And since we're talking about vulnerabilities, Microsoft has formally confirmed on Friday the existence of two new Exchange email server zero days discovered last week by Vietnamese security firm GTSE. The OS maker released mitigations, said it's still working on patches, and assigned the CVE-2022-41040 and CVE-2022-41082 identifiers to the two vulnerabilities. Also on Friday, CISA also updated its GEF database with three new actively exploited vulnerabilities. Two are the aforementioned Exchange zero days, while the third is a remote code execution vulnerability in Atlassian Bitbucket servers, disclosed 2 weeks ago and tracked at CVE-2022-36804. Also on Friday, in a suspected APT attack, CrowdStrike said it detected that a Chinese threat actor compromised the infrastructure of COM100, a Canadian company that provides customer support chat applications. CrowdStrike said the intruder modified one of the company's installers to deliver malware to its customers' networks. The security vendor said the compromise was short-lived and only lasted for 2 days between September 27 and September 29 when its security team detected the malware and notified the Canadian company. And last but not least in today's news, security firm Zscaler closed last week its $25.6 million US acquisition of ShiftRight, a company specialized in security workflow automation services. This concludes the news section of our podcast. In our next segment, we'll hear from Daniel Schell, co-founder of Airlock Digital, this episode's sponsor. Daniel is here to talk about a new feature they recently added that now makes application allow listing a lot more easier on Linux systems.
So I thought I'd talk about a new ability we'd recently added into Airlock. Application allow listing has been challenging on Linux in the past, traditionally because of the way that Linux updates, and also the fact that executable files on Linux aren't signed. Package files such as RPM files, however, are signed but with a key, and this information is stored in the YAML and your apt repositories on the local systems themselves. So by enumerating all the entries in the database as well as monitoring for changes, we're able to sort of pass through that trust by saying, for example, all the operating system files are signed by Ubuntu or by CentOS or Red Hat as the signer of the actual RPM packages. From an application allow listing point of view, this allows you to trust, you know, the individual vendors of different RPM packages and makes things such as upgrading an entire operating system much easier as all these files are trusted by the actual publisher of the package. This allows organizations to, you know, upgrade entire fleets of Linux machines with, you know, monthly upgrades, for example, without ever having to leave enforcement mode. Many of our customers have been really excited about this capability. You know, it allows them to shift from sort of a hash or path exclusion based trust to really only trusting the quasi publishers for packages that they actually install on their server instead, making the maintenance overhead much less for these operating systems.
This is it for today's news. You can find links to all the technical reports mentioned in this podcast in our newsletter at riskybiznews.substack.com, and you can subscribe to our podcast via our website at risky.biz.